Hey there, foreigners! This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Did you ever think about going back to India or your home country? I've heard that phrase, "I want to relocate to India one day," so many times from friends and family members. But the truth is, no one actually does it. My guest today, Dinesh Agarwal, actually moved to India after his PhD and built an app development company, ProStart, entirely based in India. I invited Dinesh to talk about how he is able to serve an American clientele based in India. Dinesh, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Thank you, Rohit. It's a pleasure being here.
So, I quickly went over your introduction, but right now when someone asks you, what do? How do you answer that question?
You know, it's really difficult because our business model is a little different from other things. It's not outsourcing. It's not prototype-based development. So, I coined a word inspired by what I have been doing my PhD, right? So, with cloud computing, words like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, these things became popular. Mm-hmm. So I call my business model startup as a service. Mm. So what we do is we partner with people who have great ideas. We come in as a technology partner. We take equity in the company that is being built and we charge them whatever it costs us to hire the team, the developers, the designers, etc.
Okay. So you're saying that you will also get an equity on the top of whatever they would pay for a developer, right? So that seems like an additional expense. Why would I be willing to do that? Why can't I just go hire a developer alone?
That's actually a valid question, and then we get it almost invariably from everyone who works with us. So the thing is, first, working with freelancers in a country like India, there are cultural differences. So unless someone understands what language you speak and what language they speak and how you think and how they think and the difference between expectations, unless you understand that, it's very hard to work with freelancers. They will think differently of you and you will think something else of them, and then eventually the relationship will be ruined. Mm-hmm. Also, the quality of work sometimes is not predictable. So it becomes very frustrating. If you want to hire a large company, it's prohibitive, mostly due to cost. So a startup entrepreneur who is just starting up, who is bootstrapping his company, cannot afford that. So we give them something in between. So we charge maybe less than what a normal freelancer would charge. Because I pay my people monthly. So they are on a monthly retainer. They are not freelancers. So they don't have to worry about what happens if I don't have a job or something. So, you know, they have a stable job. So they are able to work for me for less than what a freelancer would cost. Plus, you get the quality. Having a PhD in computer science has taught me how to manage people, how to create really good frameworks, create really good architectures for softwares, and then I put that into work here.
So it's for the dependable, reliable quality on a consistent basis, which is your promise as ProStart.
Exactly.
Got it. So before you relocated to India, you were in the US. What were you doing in the US at that time?
I came to US for my PhD. I was a PhD student at Georgia State University. I was doing my PhD. I started with parallel and distributed computing, and then cloud computing started becoming very hot. So it brought a lot of challenges with it. So I was working with cloud computing and then We were trying to see how cloud can be utilized the way right now researchers were utilizing Linux clusters or other big machines like supercomputers or grid systems. So I tried to do the same thing in the cloud so that, you know, researchers have easy access to cloud as well.
I see. Did you have any entrepreneurial experience while you're doing in your PhD?
Yes. Towards the end of my PhD, a person from our university contacted me, and he had an idea, and he was looking for a technical person to help him out. So he contacted me and he said, hey, I have this idea. Would you like to talk to me? And I was like, yeah, you know, I was a PhD student. I had all the time in the world. So I said, come to my office and let's discuss. So he came and then he explained his idea, what he wanted to build.
What was the idea, Dinesh?
The idea was to create a website that is a marketplace for students. Students can trade books with each other, either for money or straight away for books. So if you have books that you used during the previous semester and now you want to sell those books and get the books you need for the next semester. So you could put a request that I have these books and I need these books. And our system will match you with people who have the books you need and who need the books you have. So you could trade books directly, removing the middleman, which are the bookstores, from the transactions.
Okay, is this your company, bookup.co?
Yes, but we are giving it another try now because that idea did not work, so we will be relaunching it soon.
Okay, what did not work?
Actually, nothing worked for. And then that's being an entrepreneur, right? I mean, you can have all the good ideas, but sometimes people won't like it. So we just took it down. People were signing up. We were getting consistent signups, but people were not trading books. So one thing or something else was missing. So we couldn't really figure out what was it. So I think it was time to shut it down.
Yeah. I know you shut the book up down, but you used a lot of things that you learned in other companies like Flippiness, for example, which I'm going to get to later. But during your PhD, you wrote a complex algorithm which goes to club websites, which I was very interested about. What was it?
So, as a graduate student, right? I mean, you want to have free food because for some reason, all grad students like free food. So I thought, why not use the computer slaves that we have and then tell them, hey, you know what, go across the campus and find where is free food. And I'll just go and grab a slice of pizza and a drink and then, you know, like that'll be fun. So I wrote a script that would go to RSS feeds of all the student clubs and then it will check if there was a talk today and if they were serving food and refreshments. So it would look for those particular keywords in the RSS feed of those clubs. And if there was a match, it would send me an email.
Oh, nice. Is it still out there? Can someone still use it?
I am not sure. I never kept it, but I should have it something. I'll try to dig through my emails and if I find it, I'll send it to you.
Okay. So is it like, can I use it for any other university or you wrote it specifically for your university?
I wrote it for my university because I knew of certain clubs. So okay. But it just took the RSS feed. So if you give it a list of RSS feeds, then you're fine.
Oh, I see. So someone can take the code and apply it to their university if they want.
Exactly.
It. I see. So I would love to take it and see, apply to events around in my place. Maybe not for food, but to find out relevant events, right? Where there are... like one thing I can think about immediately is the best guests that I get are usually from events. And I can go to an event website and see who have been in that event or who's speaking in that event and whether there would be an appropriate guest.
Makes sense. See, that's a good idea. That's how you get ideas as an entrepreneur, right? So you are entrepreneurial.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you do on the day you graduated from Georgia State with a PhD, Dinesh?
I graduated, walked the stage, came down, hugged my friends, and I told them, you know what, this is goodbye as well. And I went back, packed my bags, and flew back home.
So that is very dramatic, right? Like on the day that you graduate, you go and pack your bags. But what happened before that allowed you to take this big step?
Right. So when I was working on this idea, we started going out to startup events, like entrepreneur student mixer events and other events. In Atlanta, we had we have Atlanta Tech Village, and that's one of the big like tech homes. So lots of startups come out of there. So they usually have these events regularly. So we used to go there, and I started talking to people, and I figured that there was a common problem. People had good ideas, but they did not know how to build those ideas. Mm-hmm. They always were looking for technical people. So I thought, hey, wait a minute. So these guys are having problem getting their ideas to the people who need those ideas. So I started talking to them. I asked them, what if there was a service that would eventually become ProStartMe? Would you use it? And they were like, shut up and take my money. So that was a validation for my idea. So I knew that if I started this and I put all my efforts into it, I could make it work. Mm-hmm. So that allowed me to have the confidence that I can go back and still do well.
So when you moved here, what did you first do? What were your first steps towards creating this company called ProStart?
Right. So after 4.5 years of working, researching, and living on coffee and PPJ, you know, what do you do? I took 3 months off. No work, nothing. I did not reply to any emails. I did not do anything. I took 3 months off, went to hike Kilimanjaro.
Tanzania?
In Tanzania, yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay. Did you still see the ice peak? They say that part of it is melting and you won't see it in a decade or something like that. So this is the last few years before you would see the top iced.
We did see it.
You did? Okay.
I guess we were lucky, yeah.
Lucky, yeah.
And then I came back and I started working on ProStartMe.
I see. So what did you start doing? Like, what were your... Because starting a company can be a daunting task, right? So you have this vision of starting a company, which is like a big thing. And how did you break that down into smaller pieces? And what was your first steps?
Right. So first thing I knew was I had to hire the right people. So I started working on that. I started going out to meetup events in Surat. I started meeting people. I started telling them that we were looking for people. I started looking at different job websites and I started interviewing people. That was one thing that I was doing in parallel. I was also telling others that, hey, you know what? I'm starting this company, and if you guys have something, let me know. And as I kept on hiring people and I did not have any projects, we put our services out there for free. We said, you know, we don't have any project. We're just starting out. We're looking for projects. But while we do not have any projects, if you guys have something that you want built and that's good for general public, let us know. We will build it for free. So just give us ideas and we'll build it for you.
What do you mean by putting out there? Where did you put?
So like we went to Reddit, we went to Quora, and basically I did all that. I would go through these online communities. Let's say inbound.org, or it be Growth Hackers, or it be Reddit, or Quora, or Twitter, and Facebook groups. So wherever I could find people who would be interested in getting something built, I went there and I told them about what I was doing.
Where did you set up your company from in India?
It's a city called Surat. Mm-hmm. It's famous for diamonds and textile.
Yeah, it's in Gujarat, right?
It's in Gujarat. It's 4 hours.
Okay. Is that your hometown? Here. Is that where you grew up?
It's not my hometown, but family settled here.
I see.
And I was away from family for about 15 years. So I wanted to be close to them. And I was very close. I'm very close to my parents. So I wanted to stay close to them. So I decided to settle down here.
Even if I hear about people relocating to India, for example, I would only hear about them moving to one of these metros, right? Like Bangalore or Hyderabad or Bombay. How is working, moving to a place like Surat working out for you?
See, every place has its own challenges. Like in Surat, it's very hard to find enough number of talented people. But then I talk to my friends in Mumbai or Bangalore, they're having the same problem. So I think the only problem that I face is there isn't enough talent to interview. So I interview a lot of people, but I still don't get enough to like expand my company as much as I want. But other than that, there are no challenges because we get good internet connectivity here. then most of my clients are abroad, which is not by choice.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really make much difference.
Yeah. So you talked about going to events and things outside, right? So were you doing that in, there are events in Surat for entrepreneurs, which you went to?
There are events.
Yeah. Okay. So entrepreneurship related events in
exactly,
as well.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I was actually surprised myself. There are so many people who are converting from freelancing to entrepreneurship. So that's really heartening.
What kind of entrepreneurship? Is it like tech entrepreneurship like you're doing? What kind of entrepreneurship is...
Right.
Yeah.
So basically these are tech outsourcing companies traditionally, and now they are getting into product mode. They are coming up with their own ideas. They are launching those ideas and they are putting it out there.
Hmm.
Mostly tech related.
Okay. Do you remember? So you started putting yourself out there, putting in these forums, offering for free services, basically, right? What was the first revenue that you made, or what was the first money that you made out of ProStart?
So I'll tell you two things. First one is not the money I made, but I got. So there was this guy who he was a blogger, and he was like, dude, if you're doing this, I really appreciate it. When I posted that we will build something for free, mm-hmm. he said, you know, I need a tool that could look at people's Twitter profile and it can tell me what kind of links they share and in what frequency so that I know what are their favorite websites. And I would like to know a little bit more about them. So if you could build a tool that could extract that information, I would be so happy and I will send some money your way as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So we built it and he sent us $80.
Oh, wow. So, nice. What did you do with that?
I took my team out and then we had a security guard. He was in need of some money. So whatever was left. So $80 is a lot of money for pizza for like five guys, right?
Yeah.
So whatever was left over, I gave it to that security guard in our building.
Yeah. As small as that sounds, how did it feel, right? Like to get the first dollars? Because I know that even if I can make a single dollar, like I know how hard it is to make even a single dollar online, for example. What was it like?
So that $80 for ProStart me was the first revenue, but it was not my first revenue. So when I was in US, I was also working on blogs, so I was doing blogging quite a bit, I used to run quite a few popular websites. So popular in terms of traffic, but they did not provide value. They were just some experiments I was running.
What was it? Can you tell me one?
It's not that good that I would like to attach my name to them.
Okay.
So let's skip it. But they were basically websites that would not have anything interesting. But still, they serve like some niches like very poorly. But they had ads on them, so I made quite a bit of money from there.
Can you give not a real website, but can you state an example? Like what kind of...
Right. So let's say one of the websites that I built was about international calling. So if you are in the US and you want to make calls to your home country, in that case, we would tell you how could you do that, or how could you hack into certain systems, or how could you do that without paying a lot of money.
I see. And then when people check that website out, you would get some money from the eyeballs because you can have Google ads.
Right, from eyeballs or from affiliate commissions.
Got it. And how long did it take you from this phase of trying to figure it out to actually starting to get real customers?
It took us about 5 or 6 months.
And who was your first customer?
It's a shame. I don't actually remember.
Oh, okay. What did they do? Do you remember what the product was? Or?
So I think we were continuously building products. So that's why I don't know what was my first customer. But I think the first customer was a lady I think she was the first customer. And what we built was a website called Straight, again, it's not working because we couldn't finish it. What it did was, you just tell us what city you were in, and we will tell you all the events happening at the city.
Hmm.
But somehow she had some money problems, so we couldn't finalize the product.
I see. So, and what is a product that actually came out that is helping people out there that was built through your company ProStart?
So that's we actually built a couple of small projects or features, and we put all of them under a domain name called textfreeapp.org. And then this domain was, because I had it lying around, I just used it. There is no like logic behind the name.
Okay. Textfree app, a suitable tool for marketers by ProStartMe. So this has all the links of the apps that you have built, right?
Right.
Can you, I see the apps here, TweetLinks, TweetChat, TweetLows. Can you describe any one of them which can be, which you anticipate to be most useful for the listeners?
Okay, so let me just go to their website. So the TweetLinks is actually the one I was talking about. What it does is, you give it a list of screen names, and it will give you the URLs that have been tweeted by those users. So you could give it, let's say, 10 Twitter screen names, and it will give you all the links shared by those people. And it will also give you a chart telling you what website was shared how many times.
I see. Yeah, that can be useful when you're trying to connect with someone new, like how the blogger probably used it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So working from India, Dinesh, though your clientele is based in the US, and although not by choice, like you say, how was it like using services from Indian companies? Was it challenging at all for you, or were you fine?
See, I think because I grew in this culture, I understand and I expect a little to go wrong. It's not like 100% perfect like you would expect in US. And if there is something wrong, there isn't much you can do about it. So it's a little bit challenging to use services here, because you always have to watch your back. But, you know, because I grew up in this culture, I think I understand how people work. So I can actually manage it better.
Yeah. How do you mitigate it? How do you mitigate the risks or downsides?
So first thing is that telling people that, you know what, I'm not going to bargain with you. So you put your price, but I need the best service. That actually sends a very good message to them, that tells them that this guy is actually looking for good service. And then I make sure that I'm always in communication with them throughout the service, so that they know that I am on it. So that is another way I do it, and another thing that I do. And finally, if something goes wrong, you just have to let go. And sometimes I get angry, and then like if it is something like I booked my honeymoon to Switzerland and Greece, and those guys booked us in a room with two single beds, and I was like, dude, come on. I mean,
that's hilarious.
I'm like, seriously? So now,
yeah, I hope you were able to change the room later, but that's hilarious.
You know, like sometimes it's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Tell us about Flippiness.
Flippiness, actually, yes. Flippiness is one of the tools that got popular, and it's one of the startups that I would say is getting traction. Flippiness is very interesting. Flippiness is an arbitrage as a service. So when we were working on BookUp, I had to work with a lot of data for BookUp. And because I was always a data guy, I noticed that there was something wrong with the data. And when I dig deeper into it, I realized it was not the data that had issue. It was actually the market that had issue. So there are multiple websites that buy and sell books, right? They would sell you a book at the beginning of the semester, and at the end, they will get it back from you, right? So sometimes, actually a lot of times, what happens is one website is selling you a book at, let's say, $50. Another website at the same time is buying that book back at $70. So if you could simply buy it from the web first website and sell it to the second website, you could make $20. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the difference is even higher. Sometimes we see profit margins of about $70-$80 per book. So it's like, so if I created a system that would give you all these links for a small monthly fee, would people like it? Mm-hmm. And that's what became our flippiness.
So you got this idea, right? Like, okay, if I'm able to do this, uh-huh. would people pay for it? How did you validate that idea? What did you do?
Yes, validation was actually, I think it's one of the strong points. It is my strength. I'm very good at killing ideas. So if something is not working, I will kill it. I will not wait on it to work or do something. BookUp was my first idea, so it was very close to my heart, so it took so long. But other than that, I have killed ideas in 15 days, 20 days, because they didn't work. Flippiness, what I did is I created a website with just one page. On the top, it explained what flippiness is in like two lines. And below it, we had all these links. So first link, where to buy the book. Second link, where to sell it. So we are talking about a table of rows, right? Mm-hmm. And each row has two links, where to buy the book, where to sell the book. And it shows you the profit you'll make if you did that. And finally, a button. If you click on that button and pay me certain amount of money based on your profit, we will reveal those links for you.
Hmm. So the table did not have the links. The table had just a description of the link or whatever.
Exactly. It has that. Okay, you can buy it here. You can sell it here.
Got it.
This is the profit. And if you pay us through PayPal, we'll reveal those links for you. Mm-hmm. So that is what I did. And people were like, no. I was charging them 20% of the profit. And people were like, oh, well, it's too high. I don't know. So I was like, okay, well, if it is too high, let's make it $1. So you give us $1 and we will reveal the link for you. And people continued to pay. While some people were still complaining, a lot of people were paying as well. So that's when I actually made my real money that I knew will work. So the website did not have HTTPS. The website has no credibility. It did not even talk about who built it or why they built it or anything. They were just links that here are the links. This is the money you will make. And here, pay us to get those get that information.
So how did you get people to check it out?
Again, I went to all those websites, Quora, Reddit, Inbound, or wherever I could. And then I spent some money on ads to show people what we had. So we tried whatever we could to get traffic to the website.
Okay. And so you paid for ads as well, you said?
I paid for ads as well.
I see. On Google?
On Facebook.
On Facebook, I see. That's interesting. So what was these... I'm on a post that you have about flippiness on Reddit. And okay. About a month ago, I think, you talked about how there were a lot of haters flippiness when you started. What is there to hate about this? It's just an arbitrage opportunity, right?
So let me tell you the kind of things I have dealt with. Okay, one guy, he said he got sued because he bought books from flippiness. And I was like, how on earth is that possible? And he was like, look, I bought a book. It was an international edition. It is illegal in the US. So the company that I bought that is really printing that book sent me a notice that we will sue you. And I was like, look, first thing, it is not illegal to buy or sell an international edition, right? So secondly, if someone is sending you a notice that, hey, you know, you bought a book and you're selling it to us, and it's not like the US edition, we will sue you. That's probably a scam or a scare tactic. No one is going to sue you, so please.
Yeah.
Then another, there were like haters, like they were so crazy. Another guy was like, because I used flippiness, my bank account got hacked. And I was like, how? You don't even connect your bank account to flippiness. How could it get hacked? So his logic was, I used the same password I use on flippiness. Now, someone was between my computer and flippiness server who was listening to what I do, and he took my password because flippiness does not use HTTPS. Now we do, but at that time we did not. So he said, because of that, someone actually took my username and password from Flippiness, figured out that it was the same username and password as my bank, went to my bank website, logged in as me, and took money out. And I was like, look, well, I don't know. So
yeah, I wouldn't use the same password to begin with anyway. It's right. Like my friend saying, when I asked him what was his JEE rank, I studied at IIT, so what was your JEE rank? He said, I can't say it. I'm like, it's okay, we all don't have great ranks, right? And he says, I can't say it because it's my ATM pin number. Right. So I didn't have to. It's my ATM pin number, so you'll hack all my thing. So you didn't have to tell me that it's your ATM pin number, that's it, right?
Right.
Something like that. But were there anything genuinely worrying about the pushback that you got about Flippiness, based on which you changed something? Or like, were there any genuine concerns?
So not having HTTPS, I think, was genuine. I think people are really worried about the security of the information they put on internet. And I think now they should not use their bank password for any other website. But I guess because they are my customers, and if they choose to do so, it is my responsibility as well to secure them. Yeah. So I did change that, and I invested in HTTPS, and now I have HTTPS.
Okay. And did you have to actually take down the website as well at that time?
Oh, no.
Not at all?
The post
reads that Flippiness is now back with more updates, which made me believe that there was a time when I actually took it down.
Oh, no, I think it's the way I framed the sentence, but it Got means it. That we are here, like back on Reddit with more updates for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on Reddit a year ago, and now we are back on Reddit with more updates for you guys.
Okay, got it. So, Dinesh, you have done so many apps, right? We can talk about other ones soon as well. But what would you, whether in Flippiness or otherwise, what mm-hmm. would you consider as your biggest failure till date?
Our biggest failure? It's a website called Vote Studio. It's a great concept. And I just don't understand why people never used it. So what Vote Studio did was...
What is the domain?
It's votestudio.com.
Okay.
So what Vote Studio does is it allows you to create a voting poll. Like, let's say right now you would say, who is the most favorite candidate for US presidential election, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could create... three or four different options that people can choose from. What we did is, instead of having people vote using a upward or pressing a button, we put the social buttons there. People could like it using Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Now, this is the gist of it, but the beauty of it is, if you could link pages. So let's say you are a popular website and you have a page on Hillary Clinton, you have a page on other guys, and then you link those pages to those options. In that case, anyone who clicks on a tweet or a Facebook like or a LinkedIn share, that will be attributed to that page. Mm-hmm. So your website, when you use these polls, your website will get the social love.
I see.
Plus, if people have liked those pages beforehand, when you create the poll, you actually incorporate that as well. So it will show the score starting from there. You will not start your poll from zero.
Okay. So you actually get a real sense of what people exactly. are interested in about. So you mentioned earlier that you are good at killing ideas, right? How right, couldn't right. you kill this one?
So it's basically killed. It's just using my server space. That's okay. it. We are not working on it. We are not spending any time on it. I'm not marketing it.
I see. Any other failures that you said, oh my God, I shouldn't have done this, or I could have done this differently, or I shouldn't have approached it this way, that you regret,
so
learned from, and grew?
Yes, we created a tool called MindStack. MindStack was like Slack. So we had the same idea that we will give you a platform where the entire team could talk to each other and they could share their ideas and you could retain information in that single chat window. whatever you share never goes away. But we did not polish it enough. We did not present it the right way. So the execution was missing a few things. So it did not work out. But now when we look at Slack, we feel like, you know what, we should have worked a little more on MindStack because it was nothing different than Slack.
So what did you learn from it that you apply to other ventures of yours?
The thing that I learned the most is you have to believe in your ideas. And if you believe in it, put your everything into it and don't do it in half-heartedly. Put everything you have into it, design it nicely, make the user interface very nice if it is mainly user-friendly. Like for Flippiness, it wouldn't matter if the user interface was not very good because you are giving them something else. They are coming to you not because of user interface, but because of the value that your product provides. Yeah. MindStack was like a user interface heavy product.
Yeah. Yeah, talking about Flippiness, I'm back on the post about Flippiness that you did here. And I'm very impressed with the numbers that you shared on this post with the users and with the revenue as well. Do you want to state what they are?
Why don't you repeat?
Sure. So let me ask you a leading question, right? How many users do you have on Flippiness right now?
You mean right now online or like?
No. Right now, how many people are using Flippiness?
I think we are close to 4,000 or so people right now.
Oh, wow. This was just a month ago and there were like 1,500 in that month and it's already grown to 4,000.
So we had an article by Lifehack that covered Flippiness. So that actually sent a lot of users.
Oh, well, yeah, I'm on that article. How did you get on it? Did they cover you or did you go to them?
So the way it works is if you know the authors who write for these big publications, you tell them your idea. They pitch it to those publications. And if those publications approve, that person actually writes about your startup. So I knew somebody who writes for them. So it worked out.
Oh, nice. That's good if you were able to more than double your user base just with the blog, right? And I mean, I'm sure you have a great product underlying it. Otherwise, it would not work also.
That's true.
How much were you able to make through Flippiness as a revenue?
So exact numbers, I don't do an exact math, but we make enough. I think we make close to $10,000 a month now.
Okay. What is the source of the revenue?
So mostly the affiliate commission that we make from different websites that we have on Flippiness, as well as the monthly membership fees.
The monthly membership is very small, right? It's like 50 bucks or 100 bucks, I think.
So 50 bucks or 100 bucks per person per month, yeah.
I see. Okay, that's very impressive. Being in India, building something and making a $10,000 can actually sustain a viable company, right?
It can, yes.
Yeah, that's very impressive. So how many apps have you built, Dinesh, since you started ProStart?
I think we have worked on more than 25 ideas now.
Okay. What is one that you are like really proud of?
That's a difficult question, you know. It's like asking a father which one of your children you like the most. I don't know. I will be able to answer that question honestly and then not feel bad about it.
Okay. We will leave it at that. Any other app or idea that you want to talk about that is out there already?
Yes, we have another idea called Tweetful, and it is another one of our startup that is actually doing pretty well. It has a lot of user. It has already helped customers, our customers who are small businesses or professional service providers.
What does it do?
It generates leads for you. We have generated more than 13 million leads so far.
Okay, how does it work?
So what Tweetful does is it finds people on Twitter who are interested in your business and it engages them on your behalf using your Twitter handle so that they come and check your company out. And because they are interested, they could they will probably buy from you. So think of it, someone you are a company who sells light bulbs, and then someone tweets that, oh my god, I need to replace these light bulbs, and at the right moment you go and favorite their tweet or like their tweet, as they like now, right? You like their tweet, they'll be like, who liked it? Oh, it's the light company. Yes, I can order it from their online store right away. You know what? I just needed it.
Ah, that's a smart one. Yeah, I'm on the Tweet full website right now. There's a trial traffic and authority version. Is there any offer that you can give on Tweetful? I think you mentioned in one of the exchanges that we have had, but sorry to ask you out of the blue because we didn't talk about this earlier, but is there anything?
Right, not a problem. Why don't you create an offer? Like whatever you create, I'll be okay with it. You create an offer for your audience and I'll provide it. It's a promise.
Oh, that you're putting me on a spot here. You mean, can you have a 3-day trial for a buck, right? Can I ask for a 30-day trial instead? Is that valid?
Yes, you got it.
Okay. So 30-day trial
send
for,
you,
yeah.
For $1. I'll send you a coupon code. It will extend your trial to 1 month.
Perfect. Okay. Do you want to say what the coupon code is? We can link to that coupon right here.
Okay.
Borders is good. Sound good?
Okay. Borders is fine.
Borders, because the podcast is Breaking the Borders.
Perfect.
Borders. Perfect. Oh, I'm glad it worked out well. It was just out of the blue. So, if anyone wants to contact you, Dinesh, what is the best way for them to do so?
I am on Twitter. My handle is Dinwal, D-I-N-W-A-L. I am pretty active there, so that's one way. And if you have something longer than 140 words, characters to say, you can email me at dinesh@prostart.me.
dinesh@prostart.me. Don't abuse that, people who are listening, but use it with use it wisely. Thank you, Dinesh. Thank you so much for coming on here and doing this interview.
It was a pleasure, Rohit.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. What a guy, Dinesh. He's built an impressive company and with impressive revenues all the way from India with an American clientele. If you found anything of value, reach out to the guest. He's given his contact information, or reach out to me and let me know what you liked about it so that I know what to do more of. You can find out all the show notes at breakingtheborders.com/Dinesh. Thanks again and have an amazing day.